Hang on.
Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit. Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
We're going to be talking with Gail Whitlow. She's a Mohawk, director of Turtle Island Council Ancestral Voices Healing. She's a pipe carrier and a medicine woman. She says, I'm born into the Bear Clan, and boy, I'm going to have fun with that one. Her birth manifests as healing and medicine. She said, we all once knew our paths according to what clan we were born into. Now, most spend their lives searching for a connection. She has set up an Ancestral Voices Healing Center on the Six Nations Reserve in Ontario, where she was raised. And her life's purpose since she was 25 has been to create and facilitate events that foster the traditional ceremonies that allow our connection to spirit. And well, welcome. Let me get your mics hot, guys, before we ask you to talk. You know what? Shoot.
What?
Y'all haven't been able to hear me say anything, have you? I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. I'm so sorry. You know, we've having equipment problems today. I'm gonna. Oh, jeez. Okay. Let's start all over.
Hi, Will.
Oh, CEO. Thank you. This is Will Anderson, and I've been sitting here jabbering my head off, and the mic like wasn't turned on. Anyway, so now that we've established just what an idiot I can be, we want to welcome Gail Whitlow. What more can you say than that she's Bear Clan? And she was born and raised up on the Six Nations Reserve in Ontario. This is really close to my heart because I've been proselyting the Great Law since 1986, and I just have a real special love, especially a special close connection between the Cherokee and the Mohawk, and maybe we'll talk more about that. But anyway, welcome. We would need your permission to do a Mayan birth reading on you, and we would need your full birth date. You want to? We could take you off the air to do that, but we need your full birth date to do it. So what?
Okay, well, I am 3 Ajmak.
Huh?
3.
Oh, you know
Ajmak.
Oh, okay.
I do, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Mark. All right. Did you catch that, Mark?
Well, what's it in the regular calendar? Because we're gonna do both that one, and we're also gonna do a 6 Sun Zulkin reading both.
Okay, so you want my birth date? Is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's November 30th.
Okay, and I'll take you to a side room where you can tell them the year. Okay.
Okay.
Hang on, folks.
Not that it matters.
Do you want over there? What year were you born?
Okay, side room. Is that where I am now?
Okay. All right, here we go. Hang on just 1 second. Okay, can you both hear me? Guys? Okay, Gail? Uh-oh. Something's wrong. I couldn't get you. For some reason, the green room wasn't working. All right, well, that's okay. We'll just skip it. We'll just have to skip it unless you're willing to give the year your report.
We got it.
Oh, okay, you got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that.
Well, I can say this is really impromptu because I have no idea what we're going to chit-chat about, but let's go.
We never disclose that because we want to let the spirit get a hold of this.
Right.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, she knows her other one, then we can go straight to the 6 Sun one if you want to. Your other one has been in traditional day count.
Yeah, 3 Ajmak, yeah.
So we'll do the 6 Sun, then we'll go straight to that. And that is going to have 3 components to the reading. 6 Sun Zulkin is an expanded Zulkin off of the Mayan Zulkin. So it's a larger Zulkin for the next world cycle. And it has, when you do a reading, it has 3 components. A forward flow of time, the way we normally look at time, a backward flow, and then where the 2 time flows come together, a unity or a zero point. So we'll do the forward flow first. And all of yours are actually in the existing Zulkin. You don't have any of the new days. The first one on the forward flow, you're 2 Shikan, so that's about instinct, survival, sacred power, life force. You know, kind of, it would tie into the serpent energy and the serpent twins of the Hopi that govern the poles and the axes and the magnetic fields. It is, though, in a new, it leads off in a new cycle in this Zulkin. That's the balance cycle, it's in one of the new glyph cycles. So that's more, those type of things would be probably show up more since you're born going forwards. So you probably always had pretty strong survival instincts, pretty strong connection with aspects of sacred power, and maybe balancing things, helping natural ways of things, you know.
That pretty well sums me up.
And it's a red glyph, so it connects into the red and the direction, which most of the tribes put the red in the east,
mm-hmm.
Including the Maya, they also put it in the east. And now in the backward flow, this is where some people tune into the backward flow of time with their psychic senses or intuition or something, but our physical senses
mm-hmm.
really can't pick it up. But some of our psychic and spiritual parts can actually detect the backward flow of time. And
mm-hmm.
on yours, it's an 11 kuok. And
okay.
it has to do with the catalyzing things, storms. It was also, this glyph comes up very frequently, I'd say about half the time with the white buffaloes.
Mm-hmm.
So people tend to maybe have a white buffalo connection in some way with this. And then this would be year 1997, 98, a little bit before, a little bit after that, that this type of stuff might have been showing up. So catalyzing things, causing things to happen, you know, being a catalyst.
Right.
To cause healing of things, but especially things that have to do with family and personal family, a liberation of that, helping others in their families maybe doing that. When we use family here, it could be, you know, on both a small and a large scale, not
right.
even necessarily confined to Earth.
right. Yeah.
And a lot with supernatural aspects, supernatural powers, ancestors. So I wouldn't be surprised if you recently in those years, maybe a lot of more than normal connection with ancestors showing up here in recent years, 1997, 1998, somewhere in there, and before, after, till now.
Right.
A lot of stuff about how to use power, energy, supernatural, mystical things that quantum science brings in, maybe. How to bring, not just power the way we normally, but a, more of a, you know, supernatural, mystical, spiritual type aspect
right.
of working with
right.
that. And that is probably something that the ancestors have been helping with quite a bit.
mm-hmm.
They're probably somewhere either directly in your consciousness or behind the scenes, they're probably in there quite a bit, actually. But these things, these spiritual powers and stuff, are really focused in towards kind of releasing the goodness and good virtues and goodness within family at all levels, and creating a balance or an equalization of things by doing that. And now the kuok glyph is black or blue in Mayan thing, so it goes in the direction of the west. So it's kind of
mm-hmm.
the counterbalance to the other one we saw was red, which was in the east.
right.
Now, where these two come together, it creates a third part of the reading, which is the zero point or the balancing point. And it's a 13 con. And it's about focusing, awareness, bringing a flourishing and a prosperity with that. So it has a purpose of expanding and being prosperous. And it's bringing in your other energy, your birth energy in the traditional Mayan of Ajmak or Sib, or people sometimes call it the condor glyph too. And
mm-hmm.
and it's yellow, so it goes in the south. So we got east,
right.
west, and south. Basically everything except for the north and the center so far. And that one's parting energy of brings in the aspect of reason and justice, fearlessness. And so it's how to make things prosperous, but it's reasonable and it has justice. You know, it's not just prosperity for, you know, a few people at the top.
Right.
It goes
right.
across the board for everybody. And it has a energy of Jaguar here showing up,
mm-hmm.
guiding the cycle. So you might be look out for, you know, Jaguar energy showing up. And it is one of the main ones in the Mesoamerican culture. The Jaguar is pretty high up. It, you know, in their culture, it would sort of cover the bear.
Right.
Maybe even a little bit more. And so, and if you look in their culture, and a lot of times when they show Jaguar, you'll see a throne seat, and it has two heads pointing two different directions, opposite. And the Jaguar was also the first of the three hearthstones that were set up in the sky at the beginning of this creation.
Wow.
Jaguar was
okay.
first. And
mm-hmm.
so a lot of people would connect that, the three stars, to the stars in Orion. Like the Jaguar would throne hearthstone would be like one of the three stars in the belt of Orion. And then
right.
the other two star hearthstone stars in the Mayan thing would be, what is it, Rigel, and I forget the name of the other one, down there kind of at the bottom of the feet. And so now this one also tends to, this glyph also tends to sometimes connect into corn and planting. In many of the native cultures, corn is very significant. You know,
right.
the Hopi use the corn meal, and many of the tribes have a corn dance of one form or another. So you might be on the lookout for something like that, too. Some kind of important connection might show up through corn for you as well. And it,
mm-hmm.
it often can possibly indicate, you know, a more than normal connection with the star system of the Pleiades.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, which everything you're talking about, I can relate to on many levels.
Yeah,
especially Pleiades. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Go ahead. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's well, we're gonna have an interesting conversation because Bear Clan's really close to my heart. I've got relatives, ancestors that were Bear Clan, and oddly enough, the Chickamauga Cherokee the real traditionals, they'll tell you that all Cherokee clans derive from the Bear Clan, and we've got our
mm-hmm.
own Bear Clan stories and there's. There's some groups that it comes down through that's not matriarchal. Some in Canada, I can't remember which one. I'm just having a brain fart. But for sure, the Powhatan people.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I met a Navajo elder that was Bear Clan, and there is literally as scarce as hen's teeth. And this is a very, very special man. Yeah, they were so rare in the Navajo Nation that he actually had a Bear Clan Cree people come down and visit him, just because they were
wow.
looking. Yeah, yeah, it was really cool. So I've had a lot of.
Yeah.
Oh, and my son, we threw a traditional honor powwow for him, and
mm-hmm.
he had been raised Native American Church, converted to Christianity, and they run him out. So he went back Native American
mm-hmm.
Church, but by 62, they were already cutting pieces off of him, and he was on dialysis. And his father and grandfather both lived well past 100,
wow.
documented.
Yeah.
And so he was, you know, getting the crusade out. There is unbelievable amount of people in a Navajo Nation on dialysis. It's just amazing.
Right.
So
yeah.
anyway, but the. The youths came from Toyac, and they did the bear dance. And my
mm-hmm.
son was—he was the only white kid. He looked white, you know, and he's probably more than I am. But
right.
the bear during the dance, the bear touches a few people, and he was one of them. So,
mm-hmm.
and he just turned 30, so probably. Be of a mind to start getting involved in some real things. I would push him in that direction because it's a good way to push somebody away from him. Anyway, But anyway, yeah, we're looking forward to hearing about what to do, why you do it, and how long you've been doing, and how you got started, and where you think it's all going.
Well,
so I'll just wind you up. Turn this.
Okay, so you've given me some focus, have you? Right on. Okay,
sure.
Well, when we're talking about, you know, the bear, you can be bear clan, but you also can have sacred medicine as, you know, bear medicine as well.
Right.
So, you know, when you have both, it's pretty amazing, and it really sets the tone for your life path. And I appreciate that you did that nice little reading for me, because, you know, I've been traveling to Mexico. I've been going to sacred sites, sacred journeys, and I just returned from Ecuador this week, or on Monday, which was an amazing 2 weeks in Ecuador. And we follow in the footsteps of our ancestors. But it's more than that. It's so much more than that. We do ceremony, but we also allow spirit to guide us on our journey and take us to where we have to go. So spirit has always, always, always directed our path. And we were to go to Peru as an example for this trip, this journey, and we were stopped from going. And it was amazing, because the very first circle that we held, we did a opening prayer, and the first thing I saw was, I would call it destruction, or I would call it, you know, the thunders were doing their thing. They were giving us very strong messages, and by the time it was time to board the plane, we all were told not to go. And it doesn't, you know, it didn't play out any differently than spirit planned. We had some amazing, you know, experiences in Ecuador, but for whatever reason, and I know that where we were heading wasn't in a danger zone per se, but they were keeping us back for some reason. And so we just had to go with the flow and accept that we were where we had to be. And sure enough, you know, as we were cruising the Amazon and, you know, giving our offerings to the ocean, you know, everything played out the way it was supposed to. So that's, you know, the life of, I guess, one who knows enough to listen. And it wasn't just myself. It was the whole circle. We had a circle, and we had to really pay attention, and everyone immediately got the "we're not supposed to go." So Peru is still on our list, but it just wasn't to be at this time. So that kind of is, you know, one of the aspects of what I do. The other aspect is here in Canada, or here in the Turtle Island, I operate a healing center, and this healing center came into play 9-10 years ago now. And the reason that I opened it was because we weren't, well, we were on a healing journey, but not enough people were open to energies at the time, I guess. And I remember, you know, the very first thing that I did was, well, traditional healing, but, you know, Reiki was one of the modalities that I had been trained in at the time, and everybody said, "Oh, that's witchcraft. Oh, you're working with energy. You know, you can't do that. You know, oh," but I kind of just put on the ear flaps, and I continued. And now, and then you know, I also did at the way back then. I also understood reflexology, and I, you know, got certified in that. And there was one little paragraph in our story, and it was, it came from our native healers. Basically, someone came from across the waters. They followed our healers around, Then they went back and they put a methodology to it, and that's today's reflexology. So when I heard that one little paragraph in the whole course, I started to talk to our traditional healers more about what does that mean, you know, even though I knew what it meant, and I just had to get more information. And sure enough, you know, the information that you know, came was astounding as far as, you know, the connection that we had to the land. We, Haudenosaunee, we were runners, and we had to know how to take care of our feet, as did everyone at the time, you know. So, yeah, we really took to heart these therapies, and we got away from them, of course, and put our feet into shoes and, you know, put our bodies into houses and, you know, cut off the connection to the real world. And so that took us back a ways. However, we're on the healing path now, and I feel really good that there's so many out there that are finding something for their personal growth and their personal health. And, so here in our community, we now have more than, when you get to a certain level where, you know, you have enough, well, we have more than enough doing different types of healing work, and that has promoted many different types of healing work. So one of the big therapies that we do here, too, is the Tibetan bells, you know, that energy is so powerful. So it's a blend of both, I guess you would call, traditional and non-traditional therapies, like we have here, RMTs and, you know, the foot doctors and, you know, those types of things. But the traditional healing aspect is, you know, the main focus. And so my business is called Ancestral Voices Healing Center. And just this week, I've also opened up Ancestral Voices Medical Center. And I have been attending so many funerals with our community, and our drug problem, of course, is out of control, as it is in many areas. And I never thought when I opened this business that I would be into the methadone, suboxone, healing business that way. But, you know, the number of people that come in and says, can you help? Can you help? Can you help? You know, what have we got with our natural medicines? And, you know, upon doing my research, you know, the opiates are so strong, and they're manufactured in labs, and our natural medicines, you know, in order for me to use our natural medicines, I'd have to be working with poppy and different opiates, and I'm sure that would
California poppy is about as much as do.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they say the whole heroin epidemic now is because of the opioids. The kids were taking the pills and crushing them and melting them in a spoon and injecting it, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, and it's just, oh, my gosh, here it comes again. And the sad thing is that whole business, you know, was taken over by it was originally run by the British under two different kinds of organizations, and but the U.S. took it over during the Vietnam War, and this is how the CIA has been financing its black off the book projects, you know, ever since then.
Right.
And you know,
it didn't happen.
Good friend. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what the warlord in Shan State, Kunshaw, that's what he told Begrites. Bo was a friend of mine. He was the guy that they modeled the Rambo movies after. And but he went in. Ross Perot sent him in to Laos right after the war to try to look for a certain bunch of POWs. And they were prevented from doing, by the CIA, they were prevented from rescuing these guys. And, you know, and 20 years later, you know, I'm sure they're dead by now. But see, the same thing happened with the French. They kept a lot of prisoners, and they had demanded in the 50s, you know, they wanted $2 billion. So, you know, our spy satellites ran across some the number 52 that was built into the rice paddies. These guys are being held in Laos. And so, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's just evil. It's unbelievable evil that's going on.
It is, yes. And so, you know, but, you know, the bottom line, though, is loss of connection to, you know, your ceremonies and your culture and to the land. And, you know, we have like the 60 scoop, which took our children directly out of the homes. You know, they were just gone. And then these children were put into foster homes. And then we have residential school and, you know, all to take the native out of us. And to some extent it worked. And I have to, you know, look at the underlying reason why so many people are hurting and they turn to these, you know, these ways. And
yeah.
So, you know, hopefully by combining, you know, the traditional healing and, you know, helping them in that middle process to be clean, that we can find a, you know, a happier community down the road. You know, it's really hard to watch.
Yeah.
Our children struggle, and you know, the issues that we face on our, I guess you could call them, what do they call them, our concentration camps, you know, these reserves that we have now. You know,
before you get into that, one nice thing about your reserve, I understand. I got a friend named Pat who, this guy was at Oka, you know, during that standoff and worked with him a little bit back in the late 90s. But he said that you know, the OPP, you know, would sit right outside the reserve. He says, well, we could go up to the line on the reserve and do nuts right in front of them. And they couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably the one and only benefit.
Well, but you know, I was asked a question that made me think. You know, because yeah, we understand that, you know, it's a different life when you live on the res, a different life in that, you know, everybody thinks you get everything free. Well, you know, we all know that that's not the truth. You know, oh, you don't have to pay for nothing. You know, you get free education. I said, oh, well, who does? You know, gee, I'm going to go back to school then. You know. You know, they have a misconception about, you know, what life is on the res. But somebody asked me, they said, well, how come you want to go home then? How come you're happy to be going home? And I had to think about that because I said, you know, there's no place like the home. So when we get to the res, we're getting close to home. There's this really good feeling that comes over us. And, you know, when she asked that question,
smell the fry bread.
Yeah, you know, I guess,
simple,
you know, it's
pleasure.
The community. Yeah, you know, it's community, you know, and there's something special about our concentration camps. You know, you find the good in everything, and, you know, coming home is always, you know, a really good feeling. So, yeah, so, you know, a question like that just kind of threw me off balance a little bit, and I... when I thought about it, I thought of all the good things we have here, you know, our families we have here. We're lucky because on our reserve and, you know, with our Haudenosaunee people, because we still have our cycle of ceremonies and our longhouses, and we still have a basis for being. And, you know, you know, my heart especially, you know, grows every time that I hear, you know, the old teachings, and I tell myself, you know, and I even voice it sometimes, you know, if the world really knew these really beautiful teachings behind our culture and who we are as people, then the world would be a happier place. So why can't we share? Why can't we share this beauty, you know, because I know it fills my heart. And, you know, so that's an issue that I think a lot of our peoples worldwide have had, you know, with people coming and hearing our story and then putting it in a book and saying it's their story. So people get tight-lipped about sharing, you know, the knowledge. But to me, it's beauty, and anything that makes your heart happy, you know, should be shared. So that's my take on it. And so that's what I like to do. I like to share our teaching, share what I know and what I can share, you know, as far as, you know, what's been passed to me. And being Bear Clan, you know, it's really interesting the way that, you know, a bear in the woods, you may think that a bear in the woods is, you know, a lonely being, but, you know, that's where the bear in the woods really gets the teachings, you know, down pat. And so you really get a sense of, I guess, that transmission of, you know, that not just a worldview, but a universal and a, yeah, I guess a universal worldview, you know. It's, something
well,
happens
yeah,
when you...
The Bear Clan is universal. You know, there was Bear Clan and Neolithic Europe.
Yeah.
And in Switzerland, you know, there's a they're seen sisters. They were originally a pagan convent and were Christianized. And but yeah, you know, it's like, and of course among the Cherokee, different groups do the stop dance different. But the way we did it was we had an eighth bench. You know, the seventh, the eighth bench in the north, and it just left there just in case, you know, somebody came in from Bear Clan. And but the story among the Cherokee was that the people of Bear Clan went into the forest and they sacrificed themselves, and they came back in the form of bears. But I kind of looked at it like, you know, if you're Bear Clan, you're really born to sacrifice yourself for the people. And it's almost a priestly thing. It's kind of a mystical thing.
Right.
But I understand what you mean. I understand what you mean.
Yeah. Well, being Bear Clan, you know, it I guess it helps you a lot because it takes you from the road well-traveled and it puts you on a different path, you know, because you take what you need from, you know, I guess your travels or your situations in life. You take what you need and you put it in a place and you let that expand and grow and grow and grow. And once you know, so for instance, you know, I've had many visions, many dreams, as many people have, and you know, I've seen the other side. And nobody could ever tell me there's not the other side. And, you know, those kinds of things, they really enhance your ability to grow because you're not held back by others' beliefs because you have your own beliefs that you put forth and that you have experienced and that you put into your toolkit to pass on to others, you know, when they need, you know, what you've also, you know, what you've learned over time.
Right.
Yeah.
And let's see, what else was I was going to ask you? Bear Clan trivia.
Oh, Bear Clan trivia.
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas.
Matoaka was her real name, and her father was Bear Clan, and it's patriarch, you know, amongst them, and a few other most Indians think, oh, all Americans are matriarchal. Not true. I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
But she had a really interesting father. This guy, they called him King Pahat. His real name was Sunukok. But he spoke Portuguese and English, and
mm-hmm.
he may have actually been kidnapped once or twice. Well, Opechancanough his brother was known to have been kidnapped by the English and brought back. But it looked like the Portuguese got a hold. Of course, they were right there on the East Coast. So, and my gosh, I've got a friend that had a bear claw necklace. And he, but the real deal, you know, it's, it had hair and a little bit of fecal matter, you know, and it was, you know, real. And he kept sacred items in. He said, here, put this on. He says, I have to go in the restroom for a few minutes. I'll come back out. And I was just sitting on the floor, and I slip into altered state pretty easily. And when he came out, he said I wasn't breathing. And he shook me awake. And as I was coming awake, I was looking right. The bear was nose to nose with me. It was like, whoa, you know, yeah, it was wild. It was really wild. And, what can I say? I'm a Bear Clan fan. I had the pleasure of spending the night across the street from the Longhouse in Eastern New York, you know, of the first one that was built after after they got organized after Handsome Lake's Good News Religion, and which is a really interesting subject because it had profound effects, over a major American religion, but hardly anybody in that religion knows it. It's really, really interesting, and I was fortunate enough to. The couple of the first two teachers I was introduced to back in 85 and 6, Rolling Thunder and and Robert Shrewsbury. Now, Robert he became chief of the United Eastern Lenapes, which is, you know, back in those days, there were some really big organizations pre-internet. And when Sam Greenwolf died, a lot of people just called it a club. But, you know, this was a good-sized organization. And he proselyted the great law, and that's what he taught me to do. And I've done two or three funerals, you know, using wampums from the great law and not strangely enough, there's people in the UN that really revere it and think it should be thought about very seriously.
Well, you don't have to.
It's been a real pleasure. Yeah. And and another interesting little tidbit. I don't normally talk this much. Try not to interrupt. But I'm just over exuberant tonight. But I'll say there was one other thing I was going to tell you, and I lost. Okay, time for you to talk. I'll remember what that other thing was here in a minute. I remember what it was. You know, the original book that was written about the Great Law Peace back in the 30s ran across an interesting little thing in there. The author, you probably got a copy on your bookshelf. I know you read it fully, but they said that the meaning of the Goeta, and this written up, it's on the Canada's Parliament's website, that the meaning of the word, his name meant double row of teeth, which is really interesting because there's a tradition on the other side of the Eastern Ocean about people with the double row of teeth. And including a regiment of them guarded King David. And these guys, because they had my friend Robert Shrewsbury, when he was a kid back in the 50s, in order to eat, you know, there wasn't enough money to eat. They go dig up, and there was an Anasazi star on there. He dug up a skull of double teeth and beads.
Right.
So these people did exist, and but they'd make certain sounds that normal humans couldn't, and that's where we get the what they were called, the gibbim, is what the Hebrews called them, and that's where we get the word gibberish from.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
You got sure, people on both sides, it's, you know, the old world and the new world. And but to my knowledge, the only person that talks about it is me. I guess, of course, I try everybody I can that knows about the law and the peacemaker. And who was this guy that, you know, came in over the Bay of Quinte in the stone canoe, you know? What was that all about?
Okay, so you know, being here and in this community for so many years, there's a lot of open questions, you know. Where did he come from? And so our stories say, well, he came from the West. And so when I would say, okay, yeah, okay, so like, where's the West? Where in the West? And so I was down in Navajo land, and lo and behold, we had a 3 to 4 hour conversation, and he came in as a bolt of lightning, and he did his work, and then he left as a bolt of lightning
well.
And so there's a whole, all I can say is there's a whole 10 hours and 15 and days in there of the story. But that was a missing piece that had always, you know, intrigued me. And I was always searching for that, and then the answer came. And so one of the reasons I like to travel is because everywhere I go, there's a piece. Like in New Zealand, we just happened to be going down this little path, and there was a sign, and it said the Tree of Peace. And I looked up, and there's this beautiful white pine. And I'm going, okay, so can you explain to me what significance this has? And sure enough, they talk about the Waitaha people being there, and they lived 1,000 years in peace. And they came from Turtle Island, so they were our people. And oh my goodness, you know, just so many things come together when you travel and you have the opportunity to feel the energy and to hear the stories. And then it just helps you to understand more about, you know, what your work is. So, you know, when we go into our longhouses and, you know, we have, you know, ceremonies that we're putting through, and the people, they all get so excited, especially for, you know, the special days. And, you know, they put their, everybody makes new regalia, and then we go into ceremony, and to see everybody proudly wearing their regalia, and then we do our ceremonies, and, you know, you can really just see the energy, and you have such a good feeling of, you know, oh my gosh, look at this. This is so beautiful, so powerful. And, you know, so those kinds of things, they really help you on a level that is, I can't even, you know, put into words the beauty that most people miss in their lives. And I'll share one story about this. So there was a time in my life when, I guess you might say, I was not quite as happy as I am today, and I have going through a lot of things. And I went to see a medicine man, and the medicine man, he looked at me, and he played me a song. He says, you need a song. And so here he is, you know, here's Gail, you know, big, strong Gail, and all of a sudden he's singing, and Gail's in tears. And I'm going, what the heck? How did he do that? And he looked at me, and he said, here, you take this bare root, he says, and you go sit by a tree by a river. And I said, okay. And my session was done. And I'm thinking, what? So having a busy life at the time, you know, I had raising my 5 kids, trying to work and go to school, and there was no time, but I kept thinking, you know, I have to do this. And so one day, I was close to the place that I wanted to go, and I had about 10 minutes. And I said, you know, I'm going to do a practice run. So I went down to the spot, and I, you know, I'm chewing on my bare root, and I made my tobacco offering, and I'm sitting there looking at my watch because, you know, 10 minutes, you know, oh, geez, I've only got 10 minutes. And so I says, okay, well, my time's up, so I have to go. And all of a sudden there was this voice, and it said, what do you see? And I looked around, and I said, well, I see the river, I see the bank, and, you know, I was kind of lost for words, and the voice said, you're missing the beauty. And that 5-10 minutes there, it really changed my whole life, because after that I had to reevaluate everything that I did in my life, and I had to look at, okay, how am I seeing it, and how is it really? You know, so, you know, our teachings, you know, they're the core of who we are. And so, you know, a medicine man here, a teaching there, you know, a ceremony over here, you know, all of these things blend together to create for us that missing puzzle that, you know, that is us. And it doesn't have to mean that we're, you know, belong to a tribe or a nation. It just has to mean that we get back to our connection with nature, because nature doesn't care that we're Mohawk or that we're Ojibwe or that we're French or whatever. You know, nature has no interest in that. There's no branding. You know, it's look at this is. This is who we are. We are all interconnected. The plants, the animals, they'll all communicate with you. If you allow that to happen, you know, the Earth Mother, she'll take you and she'll wrap you in her blanket and provide you with this feeling of pure love and, you know, joy, if you allow, you know, yourself to be in that space. So, you know, I think just being human on this earth right now, it doesn't matter what culture we are, it's really important that we feel that, you know, we feel that love that the earth has, because, you know, I was in the ocean, and the ocean spoke, and the ocean said, it's not us, it's not the water, or it's not the earth that needs the healing. It's you, the humans. And so, you know, I took the water and I bathed myself in that water, and I understood, you know. So we have to look at, it's not, the power isn't coming from, you know, us as humans. The power is coming from nature herself. And so we have to really take it upon ourselves to understand that, you know, as we bathe ourselves in the water, that we're being cleansed. and that conforms to a lot of religious and a lot of things that people already know. And in the real world, that is the real world, and we're living a false world in our homes and in our everyday lives. In Ecuador, what I really found beautiful was everyone had their small little gardens, and they were happy tending their gardens. And then they gathered up what was they could sell in town, and then they put it on their back, and they went into town, and then they just walked around and they sold their, you know, whatever it was, their food. And then they went back, and, you know, to see the people working together and happy, and, you know, that's what we're missing. We're missing, you know, simplicity in our life. And I think if we find it, if we allow ourselves to find it, that our world can start to shift and change. And I think, you know, with the powers that be these days, people are shifting back to that. You know, they're wanting that simplicity too because they know something's missing from their life. So, yeah.
Well,
that's a tangent.
That's so true. So true. Well, yeah. Sounds like you've really been privileged to talk to some really speakers of information, and you've had a good life, but I guess there was a time when you turned kind of took things around, and for me, you know, a lot of it goes back to 98. It's really amazing just how many people come on here, and when Marx says, things, you know, really changed for you in 97, 98, it's amazing. And I know what happened to me, you know.
That's true. That's true of our planet, too.
Right. Yep.
Because if you look at that year, around that time, that's when the Earth started to change its oblateness or something around the equator.
Yeah,
it becomes more spherical or more pear-shaped or whatever. That year, mm-hmm. it started to reverse and go the other direction.
Oh, really?
Right.
Well, you know, it's a British thing about things. When things go wrong and they go pear-shaped, maybe some things will start to go right. I forget. Yeah, it was around that period of time that scientists started noticing not only heating in our world, but just about every body in the solar system
except for
a few of the moons. You can go back. You know, there's been a lot of spin on this. And personally, I think if there's a wobble that happens every few thousand years, and they're far enough apart that there's no real knowledge of exactly how long the cycle is. But, you know, with these satellites, you know, they've got a cable TV we watch all the time. But looking down through the sand of the Sahara, they discovered that it was, you know, during the last cycle, it was a swamp. There was a lot of water in there.
Right,
and,
and
that reason why you got, you know, 5 or 10% of scientists there say, hey, well, you know, not so fast. And it's become a real political football thing. But suffice to say, we know something's happened. And we knew we were supposed to watch for certain signs of the times. And, you know, including, you know, the Space Brothers coming back. And you could launch into.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And, go ahead.
I was just at the equator. Of course, Ecuador is on the equator, and so we were at the zero latitude point, and our guide made a comment that I'll always remember, because she says, you know, people think that the world spins north to south, she says, but really it's east to west, you know.
Well,
and for me, I went, hey, how come I didn't know that? You know, how come I didn't think of that? And so, you know, we did all of those experiments with, you know, the egg right on the nail. And, you know, we also, we had this, I guess, a sink. It was a sink, and we said, which way is the water going to flow? So, of course, right on the equator, it went straight down, and we moved a little bit north, and it went clockwise, and then we south, and it went counterclockwise, and of course we knew what was going to happen, but you know,
Coriolis
you know,
effect,
to
right.
actually see it,
wild,
amazing. And
what kind of elevation does the country have? Because if low elevation, it'd be really brutal. But is it kind of mountainous?
Ecuador was extremely mountainous. Like, we were up in the clouds many times during that time.
Okay.
It's like 10,000 feet.
Whoa.
Well, we're at the ocean as well, and in 1 hour, a couple of people burnt in 1 hour. And I said, wow, this sun must be really, really, you know, coming straight down. And, yeah, they burnt. And I says, well, we were only in the sun for an hour. And, there was, it was amazing there to see, you know, you could go way up into the clouds. And then there's a mystical aspect to those clouds. And, you know, I remember we were all chit-chatting and we hit those clouds. And I said, stop. Stop. This is a time you have to get into your space. And there was this profound message that came, you know, when we were in that cloud space for, and it was only lasted like a couple of minutes at that time. But I mean, wow, there's a mystical, magical element to, you know, being able to be in the clouds and then being able to swim in the ocean all within, you know, a few days. So
it's a special place.
Yeah,
my wife's got a nephew. He's stay-at-home dad. His wife works for Homeland Security, and they live in Maryland. And they've been down there twice, and he's actually seriously moving down there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you'd want to, because there's the sense of peace. You know, there's this sense of, I guess it's what we had, you know, a few years back, maybe about 500 or 600 years back. You know, there was this peace where, you know, you weren't worried about money and you weren't worried about this. You might have been worried about survival, but, you know, and even though you were a hard worker, you know, you had to be a hard worker in order to survive, whereas today we're considered soft. You know, because now everything about us is soft, you know, our minds and our egos and, you know, everything is just like not in the real place. And so when you're there, you can see what being in a real place, the benefits of it, you know, just by the simplicity that is everywhere. But the one thing I did learn was that if I ever choose to follow NASCAR, I am going to find an Ecuadorian driver, and I'm going to vote for them because, oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow.
the way they drive, oh, my gosh. The first couple of days, I was a little nervous, but, you know, after a while, everybody drove that way, and it was like, oh, you know, they know the roads. and stuff.
Oh, yeah, they got those roads that are perched on the edge of cliffs. I don't think they've got hardly a guardrail. You know, and that's the only way you get up to Quito, I guess. And oh my gosh, you know.
It was an interesting time. Yeah, I guess we were talking a little bit about originally what happened with our people was you're talking about the Great Law, and the Great Law was given because we as First Nations people were out of balance at, you know, many times too with during our time. So it wasn't all glamorous and wonderful. You know, there were times when, you know, we were warring and fighting and we had to be put back into place and, you know, people had to leave the tribe in order to find it. And, you know, so that's why the peacemaker came and he brought us back to be. And, the teachings that we were given was for all people, and all people weren't here yet. So all people are now here, and it's really amazing to me because I have friends of all nations, and there's so much you can learn and you can think about. And I honestly think that you know, now is the time for, you know, that great peace to come back, and I think the peace will come back. It's the law of nature, but we have to go through this bit of turmoil in order to, you know, bring that peace back to its beautiful original balance. But we will get there, maybe not in my lifetime, but at least you know, down the road, we will will be living in a different world. And so that's what the Great Law talks about, because, you know, our prophets of all nations had such insight that they were able to predict everything that has happened, even the Twin Towers, you know, the electricity, everything. And they knew that there was going to be times of change, and they also knew that they also put in there what we need to do in order to survive, you know, these times of change. So, you know, as part of our, you know, being from here, I really have a good, and I have strong anticipation that, you know, things are going to start to improve and get better amongst our peoples. And I can see signs of it happening now. And I think everybody can see, you know, the good with the bad. And you know, it's a time of self-evaluation. And we are coming to a new, beautiful age. So, you know, there was times in my life where I was pretty sad, but now I'm the happiest that I've ever been. And even with things going chaotic around me, I'm still happier than I ever have been in my whole life.
Oh, yeah, because you know who's in control?
Yeah.
Somebody else.
Yeah.
And they're on the other side where they can see, you know, forward and back. The connection. You know, and there's other people in the world that have this connection, and you know, the whites call it ancestor worship. We're not worshiping; we revere them. You know, and I mean, for gosh sakes, it's amazing what people can do to discourage you from looking into other ways of life. But I mean, my gosh, you know.
You know, they forget when you say everything's connected. Well, that means, you know, the ancestors, us, everybody in the future, all of it's connected.
Right.
So it's,
that's
why
right.
Would it be unusual to have some ability for the ancestors help? Of course they're going to help you, and you help them.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Charles Lindbergh, see, you know, he was crazy falling asleep and, you know, and trying to get across the, I mean, he was just about giving up in despair. And he was checking ages. He looked behind him and he said he couldn't see the rear of the plane, but there was all of his ancestors, you know, motion, go forward, go forward, you know, go.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, I've had lots of experience, you know, with my own grandfather who died in the 60s. It was really interesting dream. You know, I had issues with my dad, and you know, he passed in 2003. It's one dream came in motion for me to come, and we both fit on the passenger side, and he got in first, and then I got in, and then when I got in there, there was his father sitting in between us, and I look at the grandpa, and and he says, oh, I just want you to know how grateful I am for what you're doing. And like an idiot, I should have just shut up and listened. And so I got over exuberant and said, oh, hey, you don't have to. And I didn't really understand what he was saying. And actually, until I started dabbling around, you know, with the Torah, and it teaches that if your family's been in an erroneous way for a long, long time, all it takes to redeem the entire family is for someone to change things and teach more correct things to their child or their children. And that's what that was all about. And because, you know, that was right about the time I'd, you know, realized that, you know, for about 1,600 years, there's been some lies going around about religion. Won't say which one. And, you know, so anyway, it's just not what people think. But, well, look, so where are you headed next?
Well, I am headed back to Mexico again. This time
Oh, wow.
We're going to head to Lake Bacalar in the jungle. We do many travels, and of course back to Hawaii, because I like to do things in fours. So this will be the fourth Mexican tour that we do, and I'm telling you, you know, our stories talk about Mexico and that being a hub, and that it's where we migrated from. And I can tell you without a doubt, you know, the dreams and the visions that happen when we make those journeys to those sacred sites. But without a doubt,
well,
you know, that's
where we
yeah.
came from too, you know. And
yeah,
I mean, Sequoia died in his attempt to go down and find the main body of the people that had migrated back there in 1721.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
there's a whole series of, you know, there's people that were with him that witnessed his death. And see, the Texians dragged him across the border because the new Texas Republic didn't want a lot of Indians traipsing back and forth, you
mm-hmm.
know. And some Cherokees were actually commissioned by the Mexican army. Matter of fact, there would be no Texas. It wasn't for neutral Cherokees that filled space between the Texians and the Mexicans. That's
mm-hmm.
that's it. Well, it's history. A lot of people don't know about it, but I speak for the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, and which
mm-hmm.
was recognized by their federal government back in 2001, August 2001. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we safeguard the tomb of Sequoia, and it's a state, Mexican state secret, and
right.
It's in Coahuila, and, but yeah, Mexico is super cool. I just wish there wasn't so much violence going on there, but,
yeah.
and, you know, and it just got to watch your P's and Q's. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and,
everywhere you go,
but
you
anyway,
can find that. I mean, the streets of Toronto.
Oh yeah, well, Mexico
City
is safe.
Chicago,
Mexico
yeah.
City is safe, and but there's certain places. It's been really bad in Coahuila for a while now, but I understand things are turning around. And oh geez, I wish it was 1917 again. They just send the U.S. Army down, pull them out.
Well, I don't know. Be careful what you wish for.
Well, you know, Trump threatened it, you know, and, you know, it's hard to say. Cause, I mean, we've got a member of our nation, you know, who's the number four man in the Mexican government. And
mm-hmm.
he's Secretary of Agriculture. And but and there's a lot of them down there that know they're Cherokee. And of course, you know, geez. I mean, going back to 2003 or 2004, I started telling some people things that my elders had said. Oh, they laughed at me because I was telling
right.
well, the old Kitu'a dialect, they call the Southern or Eastern dialect, had a trilled R, and
mm-hmm.
people laughed at me. Well, now all I have to do is just go to the Eastern bands. Wiki page, and it'll say right on there they had a liquid R, and of course the they even have produced a video saying that we preceded the Incas and the Aztecs down there. We were down
mm-hmm.
there before that, and I mean we were down there when there was black people down there, and
mm-hmm.
Or very very dark skinned people, and but the whole. And of course, what you may not know, what I was told is the Cherokee, we are not speaking original language. We
mm-hmm.
we spoke a language, and of course, there are maybe seven people on the planet that know some of the original incantations, and Dr. Rogers is one of them. But and they have an M and an R. They have sounds that even the rest of the Cherokees don't speak. And apparently our main body,
mm-hmm.
Well, it was in the 1860s when there was a letter written. You know, this is after Sequoia had died. 20 years later, they wrote a letter up to Tahlequah saying, "Oh, we're here. Just want to, you know, we're at Lake. I can't remember. It's near Guadalajara. I'll think of it in a minute. But they said we've been here and we're getting ready to migrate south." And that was written. That's, you know, a record. But Sequoia was looking for him because he knew the Cherokee Nation was in trouble. And, you know, as late as, 15, 20 years ago, the principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, told one of our elders that he had some real, real concerns that, you know, about the survival of the nation. And, so there's some heavy duty things going on and we appreciate you and what you're doing and want to encourage you have you got a way for people to contact you?
Yes. Well, I have a website, and the website is www.ancestralvoices.net. I also have a Facebook page, Ancestral Voices Healing Center, but it might be under Gail Whitlow, Gail Whitlow. Also, in August 23rd to the 26th, we're holding a gathering in Stella, New York, which is actually Lewiston, New York. And the name of our gathering is Pathway to Peace. And in 2009, we were in Sedona, Arizona, and we went to the Return of the Ancestors gathering there. And so in 2016, we were back for the another gathering there, and the Mayan elders asked us to host a gathering in the north. So that's why we chose to do it in the Niagara Falls area, Niagara Falls, New York area, because our stories tell us that that is our sacred site, a sacred land there. And anybody that, you know, knows the energy of a falls knows that there's great healing that happens.
Yeah.
So we're going to have different elders from, you know, different places come, and we're going to, you know, take a look at Pathway to Peace and how to, you know, get back on track again as far as, you know, sharing our wampum belts and the teachings that come with those, as well as, of course, our socials. And we have a very interesting agenda, I guess you could call it, our itinerary. And, you know, spiritual work means that they change at a moment's notice. But we do have one that so Healing the Sacred Hoop is actually another Facebook page that we use, and especially that one will be promoting our event in Niagara Falls. But we have many things that we do, and all of us are involved in so many things. It's really hard to, you know, name just one. We have Grandmother Circle the Earth. I believe Susan Stanton was on, talking about that project, and that is still a very vibrant and wonderful way to start bringing people back to their roots again. And there's so many good things going on throughout the world that it's really nice to be able to connect or weave or hear about other work that is being done. So I thank you for your work that you're doing, because you're providing a very informative and wonderful service for us. So, yeah, thank you so much for you and doing your show as well. Yeah.
Yeah, appreciate you. Now we'll clear up the silence at the beginning of the show and do a little editing.
Yeah.
So it's sound more smooth. But the show will be archived. It'll be on there for many years. And and you'll actually, if you want to, on your website, you can actually put a little player where other people can listen to the show if you want to, and or you can even fix it so it'll play automatically. And
there's
options,
okay.
options for you. Just let me know. And,
all right.
But okay.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. Yes.
Hey, thanks a lot. And
yes, you're welcome.
And we'll see you on the road somewhere.
Oh yes, you will. And thank you for that Mayan meeting as well.
You bet. Hey, good night, Mark. Thanks so much,
right,
Mark.
Okay.
Hey, you bet. Bye bye.
Yes. Yes. Good night to everyone. Yeah. Good night.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church, or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away is a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone and the valley. Mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. One with